Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Brad, and I'm an alcoholic. For those who care to join us, let us open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room, and the restroom is in the kitchen in the back. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that message, or that clear message, and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing steps 5, 6, and 7. And then I'll turn it over to Graham.
Hi, everyone. I'm Graham. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Graham.
I'd like to welcome everybody here tonight and thank Brad for agreeing to come and share his experience, strength, and hope with us. We started this meeting up last summer. I think it's coming up on a year at some point soon. I can't really remember, but we started it up in one of our houses. And all we were trying to do was we were just trying to do what we did when we sponsored guys, and we met them at Starbucks for an hour every week, and we took them through the steps out of the book. And we weren't really seeking to increase our intellectual knowledge of the book Alcoholics Anonymous or to impress anybody with our lack of knowledge of the book Alcoholics Anonymous. What we were trying to do was just find out what the simple actions are in there and apply them into our lives and to try to help other people to do the same if that's what they wanted to do. So we're not experts on the book, but we do believe that when we share our experience of it, people's lives get changed when we do this stuff consistently over time. So anyway, we're going to start off today on page 72. And I'm going to read two paragraphs from that, and then I'll talk for a little bit, and then Brad's going to talk. So it's on page 72. It's from Having Made Our Personal Inventory. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We've put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they've turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they'd lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they'd humbled themselves. But they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. So, step five, my experience with that. I was given a deadline by my sponsor when we were going to do step five. And so that was when step four had to be done. And the first time I did this, I was probably about 6 or 8 weeks sober. And I remember he was coming at 7 a.m. to pick me up on a Saturday morning. And I got up really early that morning and started finishing my fourth step. Because I'm the kind of guy, I feel so uncomfortable with myself and the things I've done and the things in this fourth step. Especially I feel uncomfortable when I start to look at, like it says, what the trouble is. I mean, what is the trouble? Is the trouble drinking? Is that the trouble? It turns out that wasn't the trouble at all. And see, I didn't understand because I'm very, very intelligent, and I thought when I came to AA, if I stop drinking, then I'll be fine because I have a drink problem. I'm an alcoholic, and therefore the problem is that I'm drinking too much. So it's logical for me, I love logic, that if I just stop drinking by coming to AA, then I'll be fine because that was the problem. And of course, it turns out that that wasn't the problem at all. That was never the problem. That was the wonderful solution to the problem. I didn't realize that. That's why I love drinking so much, because it made me feel better. And I didn't realize that what was wrong was the way I feel, think, react when I'm stone cold sober. That's what's wrong with me. And that's what this process is designed to relieve me of, so that I don't need to drink anymore. So I didn't really know any of that. So anyway, I feel so uncomfortable when you make me sit down and write that stuff. I don't want anything to do with that. So I've got my book and I've drawn the columns. I think I had a ruler, you know, so they were straight lines and doing all that. It looks very pretty. There's nothing written in it yet. And then I suddenly notice that the windows are really dirty and probably need to be washed. And then, and on it goes like that. A lot of procrastination in doing this step, because it's very uncomfortable for me just to sit quietly and write this stuff out. I don't like doing it, because what I'm finding out is the truth about me, and that's not too good, because my truth about me is I'm a nice guy. I'm just a nice guy, you know, I talk nice, I'm funny, I'm just a nice guy. That's my truth about me. But when I start to write that fourth column in the fourth step, the real truth is I'm extremely selfish, inconsiderate, terrified, and pretty mean to people. That's really the truth. So anyway, I admitted these things in step four, and this guy shows up in the car, and we're both smoking filterless cigarettes, and it was snowing that day, and we go off in his big town car and start driving around. I get car sick, so we had to stop. And I read this thing to him, and my head's like this. Mm-hmm. Not, I can't even look at the dude when I'm saying some of this stuff that I did. Because I did things, like, especially when I was in my early teens, and they were of a sexual nature, and I was very ashamed of them. And those things used to just gnaw on my brain all the time. And there was other things I'd done since then, you know, dishonest things that I was just very, very ashamed of. I was a guy that is very violent when I drink. I go into blackouts and I beat up the ladies that are lucky enough to be dating me. smash up houses. I do all that stuff when I'm drinking, and then when I come to, I'm horrified that I've done that because I know it's not right to do that stuff. And so it was very uncomfortable for me to read this to this guy, and my eyes didn't leave the page. I'm just like this because I'm expecting to be judged. And that's the wonderful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous as I experience it today. I've found some guys in AA who are my close-mouthed friends who I believe don't judge me. And I don't feel judgmental when they tell me stuff that they're doing. Because see, I haven't drank for 15 years. And I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I still fall short. And I still do things that I shouldn't do. And I still don't do things that I should do. And if I can't admit that to somebody on a daily basis, I'm in trouble. Because then it's me again. Just me listening to me, hiding all this stuff. And that's what my whole life was like. It was like the actor. I had double life, triple life, quadruple life. I had all these different lives going on. Nobody really knew me. And I'm keeping all these things going, all these lies, stories, crazy stuff. So anyway, it says in the fifth step here, I'm admitting to God, to myself, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. Hi, you guys can come in. There's a couple of seats right down the front, best seats in the house. So, you know, I'm admitting these things, and what's important here is I'm admitting my defects. I'm not just doing a big information dump. When I was 5, I wet my pants, you know, or whatever. I'm not just doing a big information dump. I'm actually talking about the nature of my defects, which is a different thing than just this is my whole life story. And then I'll finish up with this. It gives us a warning in here. There's only one other place I can really think of where it really warns us, and that's round about the sex inventory in step 4. But it really warns me in here, if I'm deliberately hiding something and I'm like, well, I'm not going to tell that guy that in step 5, then it says that that's dangerous and that might actually lead to me getting drunk. Now, I think everybody, I can only speak for me, and I've listened to a lot of fifth steps with guys I've sponsored over the years, and everybody has 1, 2, 3 things that they're particularly ashamed of, things that they hope will never see the light of day. That's the bottom line. And by the time I came into AA, those things, I was thinking about them almost every day. They were like little rats gnawing on my brain, my conscience. So what this seems to be suggesting is I just need to get those things out. And I need to trust that this guy, who I don't really know very well, is not going to run all over AA and blab the stuff that I'm very, very ashamed of. And that seems to be what's necessary. Anyway, on you go, Brad. Sorry.
When I first came to AA, one of my first meetings, this is the fifth step was one of those steps that I saw on the big banners, and I said, "Oof, I said that there's some stuff that I really would rather not talk about." But I was also really deluded about the. When I came to AA, I had never really examined my life. I wasn't a guy that was, reviewing my day or anything about my character or anything. I just plowed through life, loaded most of the time. But when I wasn't, I certainly wasn't looking back. And so anyway, when I got to this, and this is, I should say this, that I assessed the 12 steps without having a sponsor and decided which ones I was going to do and which ones were necessary for me. And I was one of those people that actually believed that I didn't have any resentments and that I wasn't afraid. I knew I had, the sexual relations and stuff. I had some sexual shame and stuff that I didn't want to talk about. But I was just really deluded about being resentful and fearful, And so I had to kind of rot in AA until I was ready to reach out, and that's what happened. I was convinced I was alcoholic, but I wasn't convinced that I had to do this stuff to stay sober and to be happy. And so I just basically crashed and burned until I went to this new guy. I'd asked a guy to be my sponsor early on in AA, but he was just kind of a guy that I kind of waved to every now and then, But I finally got a sponsor, and he got me into to doing an inventory, it was a very shoddy inventory I did. I just didn't have any capacity. And so I got a lot of help from my first sponsor in helping me to see my resentments, and how fearful I was. And one of the most powerful things, I guess, about this process, and I do remember, I used to hear it in meetings all the time, if you don't do this inventory and share this inventory, we'll get drunk. And I was scared, because at this point in my life in recovery, I knew that I was on shaky grounds and I needed some relief. And alcohol has always been Old Faithful. If all my other strategies for relief don't work, booze will work. But I knew that, I just didn't know where it would take me. And so I asked this guy, and we sat down, and the same thing, I was kind of, I was embarrassed. I was just, kind of emasculated, I felt, sitting for this other man with all this stuff. But one of the things that was apparent very early on was, wow, I really don't see myself. I share this stuff, and he would give me some feedback, and it was just like, holy moly, that's not a real, oh yeah, I guess so. That's, I had no capacity to evaluate myself. This solitary self-appraisal is insufficient became really apparent really quick. And the truth about that is it's become more and more apparent the longer I stay sober, is that I've acquired a habit of self-appraisal, but I'm not always accurate, and I can run it past my sponsor or run it past a friend, and sometimes I get some feedback that really shows I'm kind of missing the mark, it's just I have a way that I want to see the world and the way I want to see myself, and it's not accurate, it's in the back of the appendices, the second appendices, about the spiritual experience, and it says those things about the honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness being indispensable, and honesty, I'm amazed sometimes even at myself. I can see it in you guys. I can see when you guys are way off, and I say, God bless. this guy doesn't have a clue. This person doesn't have a clue. But man, I am spot on. I really know myself. I'm really honest with myself. And quite honest, even after 15 years, or actually I've been around AA for 25 years. I haven't had a drink in 13 years, but I've come to find out, I still can remain self-deceived. I want to see myself in a particular light, in a particular way, and it's not the case all the time. And so this is this step in it of itself is essential if I want to be honest, with myself. I got to run this stuff past another person, and there's these categories, the exact nature in these particular categories are not pleasant to see, man. I'm a good guy too, man. I'm smart. I'm a good guy. That's what I want to project to the world. We're going to go into this the double life reading here shortly, and it's like, I think that my projective social face is the only me there is, and that's the sum total of me, and it isn't, particularly when I came to AA. I had a very compartmentalized life. I don't let these people know about this part of my life, and these people know about this part of my life, but I'm not letting anybody see the whole picture. So
yeah, thanks, Brad. And we're going to go on page 73, the paragraph that starts off, "More than most people." More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He's under constant fear and tension. That makes for more drinking. And we touched on this already, but the interesting thing to me here is it doesn't say when drinking more than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. It just says more than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. And my experience of the double life and sobriety has been painful at times, to be honest with you. And but when I was drinking, what that looked like was that I really, really like getting drunk. I like getting wasted. I always have. I started when I was 13. And that first time I drank, I went in a blackout. I couldn't remember what I did that night, but I had so much fun. And as I was vomiting into the toilet the next day, I just couldn't wait to tell everybody about what had happened and planning the next time that I was going to steal the booze off mum and dad and do it all over again. And that was me. I was off. I just love getting drunk, man. I love getting drunk. I love doing drugs that let me drink more while I'm drinking. It's just awesome. I just really fell in love with it. So there's that life going on. And unfortunately, when I get drunk, I do these things that are socially unacceptable. I'm violent. I'm verbally abusive. In order to get the alcohol and drugs, I steal, lie, do whatever I can. Primarily with my family as a teenager, a lot of stealing and lying and just shenanigans, you know. And then I go out and drink, and then I try to hide everything from everyone. I was talking to this guy that I know in AA recently about my relationship with my parents. And I remember my parents are really nice. They're not alcoholics. I never saw either of them drunk. And my father would often say to me when I was a teenager, "Are you all right for money, son?" And he was offering to give me money. And my pride is so high. And I'm so resentful at my father, who's always loved me. That's why I resent him, I suppose. That I'm like, no, I'm fine. I don't need any money. Now, I've actually not got any money and I need money. And then what I would do is I would wait till he went to the restroom and steal from him. And what's that all about? Nobody ever taught me to do that. Nobody ever said, "Graham, this is how you get money off your parents." I just started doing that. You know, and that's the thin end of the wedge. That's nothing compared to some of the stuff I was doing to get my hands on money, to get high and drunk. So, you know, I'm presenting this character, but really behind the scenes, there's all this stuff going on. There's this secret life that I'm very ashamed of and I don't want people to know about. And of course, the great comedy is that everybody knows about it. I'm the last one to know that they all know. That's why I didn't have any friends. People don't like people like me because I'm a selfish user. That's the only people that would tolerate me were other crazy alcoholics. That was my bros, was my other alky friends who didn't mind if I blacked out and punched them and puked on them, wet myself in their house. They don't. I was trying to set their house on fire. They don't care. Yeah, just a good laugh last night. So that, you know, those are the people. But then at the same time, I'm trying to. For my parents, I'm trying to be this nice middle-class guy and pretend, you know, going to college and all that. So near the end of my drinking, I'm top of my class in college and I'm going into blackouts and attempting to kill the girl that I'm dating, my college sweetheart. That's the kind of dichotomy in my life. It's completely opposite. And I'm doing everything I can to try and not let people know about this other life. How it played out for me then is near the end of my drinking, I'm not going to drink in front of certain groups of people because I don't want them to see what I'm like when I'm drunk. It's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, if you've ever read that book or seen that movie. But what happened to me is what happens in that movie. I started to not be able to decide, I'm not going to drink tonight. I would say, I'm not drinking tonight, and I would start drinking. I can't drink tonight. It's the new people from work. They can't see me drunk. 2 hours later, I'll just have one. I'll be fine. Then I'm in a blackout. Party time. So that's how it is for me. And if that was just in drunkenness, and then I come to AA and suddenly I'm good, Graham, spiritual and good. Never had a bad day sober. Yeah. If only, you know, that's the promised land. And it hasn't been like that for me, because what it's been like for me is that double life, to a greater or lesser extent, has pretty much run parallel with my recovery. And how strong the double life is, and what I'm talking about specifically here, is doing things that I should not be doing that are incompatible with the sober life, whether it's relationships with people in the opposite sex, or jobs, or being lazy at work, or lying, or whatever it is. There's those aspects. My finances are a complete disaster, you know, but I'm at meetings talking about God, you know. And so that's specifically what I'm talking about. So that's going on, but I don't want the people in AA to know about that, because it's really important for me that everybody in AA thinks I'm really cool and spiritual. So I'm not going to tell anybody about that mess that's going on in my life at 7 years sober, right? My parents come to visit me in the States, and I think somehow I justified not paying the rent 1 month. So we get back to my apartment in Virginia Beach, and there's an eviction notice on the door of my apartment. And my parents are like, "Is this your place?" And I'm like, "Listen, I wonder if you could help me. I'll pay you back." And that's 7 years sober. That's embarrassing, you know? And I wish it stopped then. So let's be real, come on. I'm an alcoholic, and this double life, to a greater or lesser extent, has caused me a lot of pain at certain times. But what has happened over time is I think I've hopefully been beaten down so much by the humiliation and pain of some of those experiences that I've re-surrendered to the simple actions of AA. That double life minimizes if I'm more active in AA, if I'm working the steps in my own life, if I'm in a home group and I'm participating in it, if I'm going to meetings regularly, if I'm saying some simple prayers, and especially if I'm trying to get out of myself by helping other people. That stuff minimizes. I don't know if it'll ever go away completely, but it certainly tapers, it calms down. And it's interesting to me, because when I get comfortable and I take my foot off the gas and I get busy, you know, because I don't know if you know or not, but I'm really kind of a big deal. And I'm married, I've got 2 children, that's a big deal. And I've got a big deal job. I just got an even bigger deal job than the one I had before. So that's really important. And AA kind of can take a back seat if I'm not careful. You know, and that's not that I stopped going to AA. I'm just not as diligent and not as consistent as I may have been. And what I see happening then is, it's like if you've ever exercised and been in shape and then you stop doing it, you don't realize how good you were doing until you stop doing it. And then you're like, oh, is that scale right? I feel tired all the time, you know, whatever. So it's similar. So the double life's there, and it's there in recovery. And I am definitely somebody that's suffered from that in the past. So maybe the goal is not to have a double life, is to have a transparent life. I think perhaps that's what the end result may be. I don't know. Brad?
You know, it's, and I've said this more than once, is I, you know, when my drinking life, my life was, I certainly had some double life action going on, but I'll tell you, I experienced much more of that in sobriety than drinking. It's interesting, because when I drink, you know, the way I drink, it consumes my entire life. It's hard to carry on a lot of other lives, you know, when I'm drinking. It becomes the sum total of my existence. And of course I'm doing, you know, I did crazy stuff when I was drinking and stuff I didn't want, you know, wasn't, you know, sharing with people. But I tell you, when, you know, coming to AA and my attempts to live a sober life without the simple actions, without being transparent to another person or whatever, as I really start, my life starts splitting. You know, I start living a, you know, I have a secret this life, a secret sexual life, a secret financial life, you know, all kinds of things. I'm doing all kinds of things to get my life to work. And I can tell you, it doesn't, it hasn't, you know. And in the meantime, attempting to live this way, or have, you know, doing this stuff on the side and doing this stuff on the side and not talking about it, man, there's something that happens internally, and it's, you know, and that's why, you know, that warning that Graham was talking about that we read is, it becomes unbearable, you know. That's what led me the first time to reaching out to the sponsors, like, hey, my life is on fire. I'm not drinking, but I'm about to. My life is, I'm coming apart at the seams, and I need some help. And where was the line I was looking for? Oh, it reminded me. He is very much the actor, and then earlier in the book it says we are like the actor who's trying to direct the show, and that's I don't realize that when I'm in the middle of it, you know, I am trying to get life to work the way I want it to by this effort, this strategy, and I'm terrible at it. I'm terrible at it. I think I'm smart, and you know, I test well. You know, I have a pretty good IQ, but for the life of me, cannot get my life to work based on my own, and I'll read some great thinkers, you know, and great spiritual things, and I tried to, in a correspondence course kind of way, try to apply this to my life. And I just it doesn't happen, man. And there's some great promises. I'm going to read them anyway, even though it's not on the reading. The fifth step promises are powerful, and I will tell you after I did my first fifth step, there was such a relief. That was my first real spiritual experience in AA when I left my sponsor's house that first time. I was like, wow. I remember walking out of his place, and it was sunny outside, but it was like it was extra sunny. I felt like did he put mushrooms in my coffee? You know? But it was like, it was just an intense experience, and I felt like, my God, I've been coming to AA meeting for several years. I really feel like I'm a member of AA for the first time. And that entire like back burner thing of drinking was gone. It really was. And on page 75 says, once we have taken the step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we're on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. And that really was. That was my experience. I would not have gathered that, you know, going into it. And that's so much my experience with AA is because I guess philosophically I can look at this stuff on print and paper and go, I don't know if that just doesn't seem like that would, you know, certainly it's, how in the world does that solve your drink problem? You know, but, you know, and so many other, this, all this spiritual stuff you guys talk about, all this, you know, how does this stuff produce that? And that's what goes on in the back of my mind. But every time I do this stuff, it produces an experience that validates these things, you know? You know, I'm one of those guys that likes to contemplate a lot. You know, like what I like to read stuff and contemplate it, and hopefully it'll seep down in my bones, and that will gain the experience. But the experience is, you know, like going and sitting down and sharing this stuff with a sponsor or a person, being transparent, telling them all the nooks and crannies and the stuff I really embarrassed about, stuff I really don't want to tell you. Tell you how petty I am, tell you how, you know, how eaten up I am with anger and how afraid I am. It's just like, oh, tell another man that? Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
But it's amazing, you know. So
thanks, Brad. I'm gonna go on to page 75. When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory and we're prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. And, you know, just to piggyback on what Brad said, I've done the fifth step a bunch of times since I got sober in AA with various sponsors. And, you know, it just to go there and sit and read out the inventory, and to have that stuff pulled out. A lot of what I've got there is another guy saying, yeah, that kind of happened to me too, or this is what happened to me. And I'm somebody that in my drinking, I really inhabit a 2-inch square up here. That's really where I live out my whole life. When I'm physically drunk, and also when I'm, you know, in between drunks, I'm always in here, trapped in my own thoughts. Very lonely person. As I got older, the loneliness got worse, and I didn't realize it's because I'd pushed people away with my behavior. I really didn't know that. I thought I was a nice guy and people just didn't understand me or something. I didn't understand why I didn't have these friendships. I got so bad that I really thought everybody was horrible and this world was a horrible place. I thought that love stories and movies and in literature were just a fantasy. I didn't really think people really fell in love. I didn't really think people really laughed and had fun. It just all seemed bizarre to me. It seemed like it wasn't real. And that tremendous isolation, the first time that was really broken was the first time I ever went to an AA meeting and I heard other men and women talking about getting drunk. And I was like, oh my God. And I really, really believed that the people I had gone to the meeting with had told their friends at the meeting about me, and they were all talking about me. I could not believe it. That saved my life, that identification. That's why it's so important when I go to meetings, I hear people talking about getting drunk. That has to be an element of this. Otherwise, if I go to a meeting and you're talking about being good and spiritual, I don't identify with that. I just don't identify. I'm sorry. So these guys sitting down and not judging me, and I think at the end my first sponsor, Greg, said, you know, based on what you've just told me and what we've shared over the last couple of hours, I think you're definitely an alcoholic. And he said, and I think you definitely need Alcoholics Anonymous just like I do. It's something that can really help you. This can work for you too. And I just kind of felt like I was a part of AA at that time, and some of that isolation was gone. Because I'm the worst person to judge myself. I'm very, very harsh on myself. And those moments of clarity, when I really get, I spiral down into that delicious self-pity. You know? Oh, my life's so bad. My parents didn't treat me right when I was a little boy. I grew up in Scotland. It rains there all the time. You know, I love that. It's wonderful. It's like a big blanket. Oh, don't disturb me. So anyway, when I get into that, you know, I really just keep going, and it's very exciting for me. But the thing about this is, it really started to end my isolation as a. This idea that it's just me that's like this and nobody else is like this. And, you know, the final thing I want to say again, like Brad said, it is so important to me that if I make myself vulnerable in front of you in Alcoholics Anonymous, don't you dare judge me. Okay? You get off your high horse, big boots. Don't you dare. Don't you dare judge. Don't come at me with judgment. If I'm making myself vulnerable to you and then you're going to turn around and judge me, all I've got to say is screw you. I'm never going to tell you anything personal about me again. I need to have people that I know are also alcoholics and who also have alcoholism and who also remain flawed, because I'm flawed. I'm a very flawed person. And at times, those flaws, which we're going to talk about when we talk about those character defects, at times they kind of define me and my life and my behavior. And if that's upsetting for you, I'm really sorry. But that's the way I am. If you don't like it, oh well. So if you can manage to steel yourself to be good and moral, that's wonderful. That's nice for you. But sometimes I fall short. So it's very important that I'm coming here and I'm not being judged, or I don't feel like I'm being judged. So that's the kind of people that I'm looking, to get sober with and to share with. And the fifth step was the start of that process. It was the start of not feeling judged anymore, of feeling that this was a safe place where I could bring what's really going on behind the curtain to other men in recovery, and to feel that I would be accepted the way I am, you know, regardless of how long I've been sober. Anyway, on you go. Sorry.
Yeah, when you reminded me of my first two sponsors, the guys I did shared my inventories with. There's always an anxiety, particularly early on. Having, I was talking with Lisa before the meeting. I was talking about my family. And the family I grew up in, fine people, we're just kind of a stereotypical, I would say, Protestant family, where we don't really talk about anything other than kind of nice stuff. We don't pour ourselves on the table. We don't tell our stuff to our neighbors. You keep everything in, and I didn't consciously think this. This is just what I've realized in hindsight, but. So the first time I sat down with a man to tell him these things, it's scary, and as I'm sharing this inventory, I'm looking down too, and then quickly looking up, looking right into his eyes, waiting to see that, you're a piece of shit. Oh yeah. The first two didn't. The guys and some of the stuff I was sharing with my inventory didn't wince. Didn't even, just go like almost, yawn. And, what I've come to realize in sharing inventories over the years and hearing inventories is that we're all so much alike, and we're all just holding on to the same garbage, I'm really glad that I didn't run into someone that was a sponsor on a high horse, or whatever, because, I don't know what that would have done for me, but I've been really graced with that, to have an understanding person. And I don't even, consciously have a criteria of the people, or particularly early on of the person that I chose to hear my inventory. I didn't go up to this guy and say, "Have you had a spiritual experience as a result of these steps? Are you familiar with, what's your experience with the Big Book and stuff like that?" No, I was just like, "This guy seems to know what he's talking about. This guy carries himself well." And, and I remember too them sharing their own stories, with all these areas of their lives, with the resentments and the fear and the sexual inventory and stuff, and I really felt wow, I am not an aberration, I'm just a human being that's really just terrified, and I don't quite trust this God thing, so I'm going to do the best I can to manipulate every way I can to get this world and my life to work. Even after all these years, inventory after inventory is, it's the same kind of stuff. I feel fortunate that a lot of the gross stuff in my inventory is doesn't show up. But all this, the same kind of stuff still continues to surface, and it just points out that, I am human, and I still try to play God in my life, even after all these years in my life, when I don't stay connected in God, when I'm not in God consciousness, I slowly shift to trying to run the show, and so I end up stepping on the toes of my fellows, I end up becoming afraid, I become resentful. And so, here it is. Here's some more stuff, And but and the beauty of it is, you know, I'm still the same way too, though, with my inventories. It's like I got a deadline set for it. I mean, it was like I was in college, you know. The night before, you know. But I'm not terrified. I'm not like embarrassed or whatever to go sit down and say, oh God, this is what I've been up to. You know, this is what I'm still thinking and still behaving like, you know. And you know, I think that's just a byproduct, you know, of continuing to attempt to take these simple actions. So.
Thanks, Brad. Mm-hmm. We're going to go on to page 76 now. And it's just, if we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step 6. We've emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. So step 6 and 7, it's interesting, they really take up very, very little space in the book. But if you get that 12 and 12 book, there's like, you know, there's a big bit in there on them. And my experience with step 6 and 7 is that I've typically done them right after step 5. I've gone home and I've taken an hour to go over my inventory and really... The sponsors have typically left me with a list of character defects or things that I'm struggling with that are causing me problems. And I mean, it's always selfishness, dishonesty, fear, inconsiderate of other people, hurting people. There's patterns of behavior that have followed me through the years. And like Brad said, a lot of times it's the same stuff that comes up. But that's good, because I don't want any new bad stuff happening. You know, at least I know what I'm dealing with. And I mean, it's not as extreme as it was, but you know, it's the same kind of patterns. So I know what I'm asking to have removed. And that, I think that for me personally, sponsors have directed me that that's a time for me and a power greater than me, God, what, you know, however I understand it, to really ask for this stuff to be removed. Now, what has happened to me is that I got confused, and I, because I'm somebody that thinks I can do everything and control everything, what that translates to in my head is I get to tell God what's removed and what's not. So let's say, for example, that lust is causing me a lot of problems, or finances, or fear. Then if I do step 6 and 7 right, I'll just say, okay, God, take that away, take that away, take that away, take that away. I'm done with all that. Boom. And then there'll be some sort of explosion of white light. And then I'll just be coming into AA like Buddha, you know? Oh, just healing people. And it'll be awesome. But that's not what happened at all. And I know, it's difficult to believe. But what actually happened was I then got to experience these character defects sober. And the pain of experiencing them in sobriety, in a funny way, I think, kept me sober. Now, that sounds crazy, but if that stuff was all just taken out of me and now I'm like good and spiritual all the time, then why would I need to come to AA anymore? And if I could fix myself by saying a few prayers and just sort of using my willpower, I'm not going to be like that anymore, then why on earth would I be in AA? I wouldn't have to come here. So my experience is that I'm a flawed person. And one of my sponsors put it in such a great way that I can never better this. And he was talking about a gorilla, you know, those big animals that live in the forest. And he said to me, I'm calling him up, and I was just being crucified with pain about this character defect. I'm pretty sure it was lust, you know, and it's just killing me. And I'm complaining on the phone to him about it all the time. And he's like, listen. He said, have you ever had sex with a gorilla? And I'm like, no. And he said, well, when you have sex with a gorilla, it's not over till he's done. And I'm like, well, you know, and what a smart aleck that guy was. But you know what? He's right. And I don't like that answer, because that answer suggests that I can't change myself. And I can't work on my character defects. Let's have a meeting about how we're working on our character defects. Yeah, I'm going to make myself good. And it just doesn't work. It's not over till he's done. And And I'll finish with this on these. Some of these character defects, I really do believe have saved my life. When I first came to AA, and I know I've said this a lot, but there was this girl called Andrea, and she used to wear these little shorts to the meeting, and she was really, really beautiful. And I thought, if I stay sober, she'll date me. And that was a big motivator for me staying sober the first 6 months, because I wanted to date her. Now, that's a character defect. That's not honorable. That's not good. That's not spiritual. But it kept me coming back to the meeting, so I don't really know. And it's the same with these resentments and all these other character defects that I have. I like to tell, oh, this is bad. This is bad. This part of me is really bad. This horrible part of me is really bad. It has to be taken away. But I don't actually know that. Maybe this is the best I'm going to be, and I'm always going to be like this. What about that? That's uncomfortable. Maybe I'm never ever going to change. This is just the way I'm going to be. But you know what? In spite of my defects and my flaws and my brokenness and my frailty as a human being, I also have this other part of me that can help other people. And everybody in this room has that part of them that can help other people in spite of those flaws and character defects and brokenness that may be raging away. It doesn't mean I can't help people. It doesn't mean I can't come to a meeting and stick my hand out to that new guy and give him my phone number and ask him how he's doing. So that's the wonderful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. I can help other people in spite of all of that stuff. And I think that's what keeps us sober. That's what keeps me sober, is reaching out to other people in spite of what's going on up here in the circus. Right?
Yeah, the 6 and 7 are, you know, did we read this paragraph or did I black out?
You read a paragraph when we weren't supposed to read it, and then I didn't read that one when we were supposed to read it. Sorry.
Anyway, this step 6 is, you know, the same experience. It's just taking an hour after doing this inventory. And basically on this is asking myself these questions, you know, here we are. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cemented foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? And I remember, there's a bunch of analogies to the spiritual structure we're building in AA all the time. It's like, what does it mean? You know, and I had to have someone explain some of this stuff, you know, about the foundation. It's foundation is willingness. It says it in our literature, willingness to have that God would remove our alcoholism. You know, are the stones properly, but have we skimped on the cement and the foundation? Someone told me that was that's the one about the willingness. And then have we tried to make mortar without sand? Are we really certain about our first step? You know, do I really at depth, you know, believe that I'm an alcoholic and my life is becoming manageable? But anyway, it talks about reviewing the first 5 proposals and reflecting on that, and have I left out anything? And I've certainly, and I have in my experience, I have left out stuff, and intentionally at one time, and stuff has resurfaced at other times in that. So anyway, and then, but you know, if I've done this and I can answer those questions, then I've taken step 6, you know, the 6th step. And then the 7th step is a simple is the simple prayer, is the asking, and you know what? I'll read it now. It says, when ready, we say something like this: "My Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen." We have then completed step 7. And, you know, and what Graham was talking about, because, you know, I like to work on my character defects, you know. And I've basically, after doing the inventory and sharing it with him, I've decided what needs to go and what needs to stay, and or what I'm willing. And And it's in the language on the prayer that we read here. It says, we remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Now, I've noticed that some of your character defects have been useful to me. You know, they've been very good instructors. There's a, you know, I know we're all teachers in here, and we're not always teachers in the way we'd like to be teachers. You know, your bad example has been a great example to me sometimes. And so, anyway, you know, and that's what, you know, what Graham was saying. You know, the deal for me is getting connected with God and staying connected with God. What I tend to do is to run the show and in all kinds of ways, whether it's really apparent to everyone or very subtle ways, where I'm in my head and I'm deciding, you know, how I need to be. You know, I basically say, well, this is exactly how God wants me to be, so I'm going to do this, this, and this. And what I've found out that when I work on my character defects, I'm starting to hone new character defects in that process. It's weird, you know. I really decide that this is what I got to do. I got to be good. This is what spiritual looks like. So I'm gonna really go for this, and I become more dishonest, more, you know, full of shit, you know, and it's not apparent to me, but it can be very apparent to those around me, and I'm back off again. I'm disconnected, you know, and so, you know, that's the, you know, the deal is, you know, God did that wonderful thing. He took away that obsession to drink. And why can't he do that with every, you know, with these other things? The only problem is he doesn't do it in the way I think he needs to be doing it. But that's not my deal. You know, my deal is to continue to seek God through these actions, through these steps. And, you know, and he has taken some wonderful stuff away. You know, I can tell you that my life is profound, way better. I mean, it's, you know, when I look at the guy that came into AA years ago, it seems like a completely different human being. I can kind of reflect on that guy, and he's a different animal, you know. So, thanks.
Thank you. I think that's us as far as the sharing portion of the meeting goes. So, do you want me to do this, or do you want to do it?
What's right here? Oh. So we're going to pass the seventh tradition basket. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contribution covers each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any AA-related announcements?
John. Hi, I'm John, an alcoholic.
Hi, John.
I want to remind everybody to put on your calendars. Saturday, June 22nd, will be the annual gratitude and action event, previously known as Saturday on James.
Speak
it will
John.
Be at Ghent United Methodist Church, right down the street. Doors open at 9:30. There will be tons of food, free food, fellowship. We have a speaker. We have multiple workshops. It should be a lot of fun. So please put on your calendars. Saturday, June 22nd, starting at 9:30.
Kevin.
I'm Kevin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kevin.
The Easy Does It Center has an after-hours meeting every day except for Saturday at 10:30 p.m. And it's really useful support. It's an amazing meeting, and I really recommend it to anybody who's new in sobriety or old in sobriety. It's just fantastic, and we hope to see some of you tonight. So
thanks, Kevin. And I have an announcement from our home group on July the 8th, which is a Monday night. We're having our quarterly sub and a speaker. And the speaker is a guy called Nathan. He's coming down from DC. So we'll be eating at 6 o'clock. It's a potluck. And the speaker will be from 7 to 8. And that's Monday the 8th of July.
Any other? David?
Just a quick reminder to home group members or people who might be interested in joining this home group. Next Monday, business meeting at 6 p.m. Business meeting 6 p.m. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining this home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. Please see one of these guys. Okay, newcomers. Is there anybody here in their first 30 days of sobriety night? If you could introduce yourself by your first name, this is just so we can welcome you.
My name's
Darren. Hi, Darren. Welcome.
I'm Joe.
Hi, Joe. Welcome.
I'm Jen.
Jen. Welcome.
You have another one?
Steve. Hi, Steve. Hi, Steve. Welcome.
I'm Robin.
Hi, Robin. Welcome.
My name's Jessica.
Hey, Jessica. Hi, Jessica. Welcome.
My name's Mike. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mike. Hi. Welcome.
Okay. There is literature available. Just see one of the home group members if you're interested in getting a big book or.
Do we have? Are there pamphlets here? No pamphlets?
Yeah, somewhere.
They're in there. Okay. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. Just see one of these folks. Okay. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the steps discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at, we generally meet over at Bella Pizza on Cali Ave.
But they went out of business.
Did they really?
It was nothing to do with us, though. I want to stress that.
Any new
we're
spot?
We're going somewhere. Are we going to that Mexican place?
Sure.
Anyway, yeah.
Okay. Talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah.
Okay. Could someone please read the last couple paragraphs on page
164?
164. I'm Sandra. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Sandra.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you than to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something that you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and will surely meet some of you as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thanks,
thank
Sandra.
You. And we'll close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer.
Dropping everything now.
Well, should be fine. She couldn't wait to get out of here. It's tax time.
Wanna get in here, girl?
Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Amen.
Keep coming back.
Work when you work. How you doing?
What?